Hi, and welcome back, guys. Today at the table, we have the future. So let's get into it. Right, so last episode, you touched on the red heifers, right?
I did mention I'm going to cover it in this episode. Well, it's about the heifers. So what happened? Back in April, they shipped some red heifers from Texas to Jerusalem. And it's all about the third temple, where Masjid al-Aqsa stands. Some Jews and Christians believe that it's the key to rebuild the Jewish temple.
Don't worry, guys. We'll get into that in a bit more detail later on. So stay tuned for another jam-packed episode. And you better stay tuned till the very end, like your life or your future depends on it. Because, in a way, it does. Shoot him! Shoot him! Just keep listening to the end and you'll see what I mean. So back to the timeline of this conflict. So, we got to April 2024, so I'll pick it up from there, which was Eid. While most Muslims were celebrating this festive occasion, Eid al-Fitr, the Palestinians got a different kind of greeting. They got greeted with bombs. After 2 weeks of ceasefire, during the holy month of Ramadan, and soon as the holy month was over, the IDF was back into killing. On April the 10th, 2024, an Israeli airstrike in Nusrat camp in central Gaza killed at least 14 Palestinians, including 4 children. Palestinians in Rafah began celebrating Eid al-Fitr amongst Israeli drones buzzing over their heads. US Secretary of State Anthony Blinken emphasized the need to prevent harm to civilians during any major military operations. Diplomacy and geopolitical tensions mounted. US President Joe Biden criticized Benjamin Netanyahu's approach to the war in Gaza.
I remember this. Joe Biden, on one of his interviews, said to Netanyahu, there's too many people dying and there's a limit. We're going to be looking into this.
And do you remember his response?
I don't remember the exact response.
I'll quote it. Netanyahu's response, that there will be no force in the world that will stop Israel from eliminating Hamas brigades. Family members of captives held by Hamas met with US Vice President Kamala Harris to seek a deal for their release and temporary ceasefire in Gaza.
Yeah, I think I remember this as well. The families actually want a ceasefire. Families are protesting in Israel against Netanyahu so that their hostages can be released safely.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres expressed sorrow over the violence and hardships faced by Muslims in Gaza and elsewhere during Eid al-Fitr. On April 10th, 2024, south of Nablus in the occupied West Bank, Israeli soldiers used live bullets, stun gun grenades and tear gas during the raid. Mid-April 2024, intense fighting continued and daily airstrikes and shellings reported in Gaza, leading to substantial civilian casualties. Efforts to broker the ceasefire by international bodies like United Nations failed to materialise.
Even Russia, China put forward a resolution, but America would keep on vetoing it.
Do you know what else was materialised on the sidelines? This is back in April, the Israel and Iran conflict that started seeing significant escalation in events. So, April 13th, Iran launches a massive attack on Israel involving over 300 drones and missiles, most of which were intercepted. This was in retaliation for an Israeli airstrike on the 1st of April that targeted an Iranian consulate in Damascus, resulting in the deaths of senior Iranian officials. The attack from Iran aimed to demonstrate the capability and resolve, but largely failed to penetrate Israel's sophisticated air defences, causing only minor damage to a military base.
On one hand, earlier on in this conflict, Israel said to the US, we need your support because we can't fight on two fronts. And what they were saying there was that they're fighting in the south with Gaza, but they're not fighting with the people in Gaza. They're killing them. There is no kickback from Hamas. And in the north, Hezbollah was firing missiles into Israel. But again, it was no match. And now, while they're complaining to the US, we can't defend ourselves, they started a third front with Iran.
Iran, yeah. Or they're trying to pin Iran for supporting Hamas. I don't think there's anything concrete.
It's like when they went to war in the Middle East over ISIS, now they're trying to create this, if you
it's
remember,
like false narrative.
The axis of evil, yeah. George Bush's
oh,
terms.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Smoke them out of their holes. We're going to smoke them out. Smoke them out. Smoke him out of his cave.
They're trying to tie Hezbollah, Hamas, Iran and the Houthis all together so they can start a larger conflict.
Yeah, because they're trying to say that Iran's in a proxy war when there's not, like Saul said, no concrete evidence. There's actually more evidence of America doing a proxy war against Russia.
Yeah,
when you think about it. So that's thingy.
Also, the other thing you've got to remember, they bombed a consulate, a diplomatic site.
Yes.
And that is illegal.
Obviously, any country would retaliate in some form or fashion, isn't it?
Western nations actually said what Iran did was wrong, but Iran turned around and said, if they are using that building for any other means, then it has no longer has diplomatic status. The West said, no, you can't just unilaterally decide which buildings are and are not diplomatically protected.
Like I said, they had to respond. It was quite a weak response, to be fair, in regards to that. So from the 14th and the 19th of April, in response to Iran's assault, Israel conducted retaliation airstrikes targeting Iranian military facilities in both Iran and Syria. These strikes were limited but emphasised Israel's capability to respond forcefully. Israel's retaliation was strategically measured to avoid further escalation while still demonstrating its defensive and offensive capabilities.
You have to remember, Israel wanted to go all out. They had politicians who were writing on there, drop the nuke. Initially, the Western government said, do not lift a finger, don't do anything. But Israel said, we will do what we want. And then the Western countries, the Western leaders, found out about Israel's plan. They decided, go ahead, but keep it as minimal as possible, which did avoid escalation.
The UN is not much help. Actually, speaking of the UN, on April the 17th, the UN launches flash appeals for humanitarian aid in the occupied Palestine territories, highlighting the dire need for medical supplies, food, water in Gaza.
The Gazans are not getting any aid, food, and they're starving, literally. It's not like when you say, oh, I'm starving and your tummy's rumbling a little bit.
No, it's actual, it's like...
actual starvation.
When they say it's dire, it was dire, so...
Yeah.
Remember from Saul's episode, you know, like when they cut off electricity, water supplies.
And you have to remember, they actually declared the citizens of Gaza were on the precipice of an actual famine.
Yeah, international federations like Red Crescent Society condemned these attacks, calling for immediate protection on healthcare workers because of the increasing attacks on medical facilities, including hospitals, ambulance services.
And aid workers,
yeah. On the 25th of April, diplomatic efforts intensified with multiple countries urging restraint. The US reaffirmed its ironclad commitment to Israel's security, while regional places like Egypt called for de-escalation without directly condemning Iran.
Dims, good point. You're mentioning other regional countries getting involved. When Iran did attack Israel, Israel had support from other countries. The US was involved, French were involved, the UK was involved, and even Jordan shot down some of the missiles. What they said was the majority of missiles were intercepted even before they got to Israel.
Yeah,
and these
yeah.
were intercepted by fighter jets and drones. Fighter jets from the US, fighter jets from the UK, fighter jets from France, and even some Jordanian planes and ground-to-air missiles took down these rockets.
So, moving on, but still in April 2024, student protests against Israeli-Palestinian conflict across various universities in the United States began. Thousands of students and more than 130 colleges and universities participated in these protests. The demonstrations took place in opposition to the ongoing war against Gaza. Over 2,000 demonstrators were arrested during these protests.
Yeah, I remember this. Students started setting up tents encampments, did they call them? What did they say in camps?
Sure. Yeah.
But what they were looking for is de-investment in resources in Israel.
Yeah.
Basically, hit Israel where it hurts, the money.
The money, yeah.
And this is what the BDS movement is. And the universities were trying to build on that BDS movement.
The protest began at Columbia University when the student pitched tents on the campus lawn while the university president testified before Congress about anti-Semitism. Police actions against the protesters at Columbia led to similar protests at other colleges across the US.
Yeah, what we were seeing was Zionists mustering up all of their supporters around the world, pushing politicians to pass laws to stop protests. Similar in the UK, they tried to ban the Palestinian flag. They tried to ban the chant from the river to the sea. If you do find that offensive, Israeli politicians used that themselves. Israel will be whole from the river to the sea. Why can one group use it and not another? And when Palestinians use it, they use it in the term of not the land being free, the people being free.
True. So I think the students were fed up with this hypocrisy and unjust war. So the protest may have begun at Columbia, but as the crisis at Columbia, it actually inspired similar actions to other universities across the nation of America. So it just spread. Northeast region of Georgia, Washington, Brown, Yale, Harvard, NYU and more. West Coast, UCLA, University of California and Berkeley and University of Washington. Midwest regions of Wisconsin, Northwestern University of Michigan and many, many more.
While the protests raised awareness about the conflict, specific achievements were varied across the universities. The protests actually highlighted the role of university endowments in funding various activities and the ethical implications of those investments.
In summary, these student protests aim to pressure universities to take a stance on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, just like Niz said, by divesting from Israel and recognising the academic ties. While they sparked important conversations, the long-term impact remains subject of debate.
The Anti-Semitism Act of 2023 was passed by the US House of Representatives on May 1st, 2024. If it became law, it then becomes a definition of anti-Semitism created by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, that's IHRA, in the Title VI of the Civil Rights Acts of 1964.
The IHRA has used that definition.
The anti-Semitism definition, you mean?
Yeah, the anti-Semitism definition to gag any criticism of Israel. So, what is the definition of anti-Semitism by the IHRA? Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred toward Jews.
I hate
rhetorical
you.
And physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities.
The bill essentially is Congress's response to the pro-Palestinian demonstrations. They're just alleging now that it's, they're just using, like I said, anti-Semitism as a way to sort of gag the students from speaking. So it addresses concerns of hate crimes, they say, against the Jewish individuals and institutions. Well, that's pretty much self-explanatory. However, critics do worry of some of the definitions provided by the IHRA.
One of the examples that they gave was the IHRA's definition of comparing Israeli policy to Nazi Germany is anti-Semitic.
You can call Nazi Germany bad for what they did. If you're going to say Israel's bad for what they're doing, that's anti-Semitic. Is that what they're trying to say?
If you compare Israel to what the Nazis did, then yeah.
And he's also referring the biblical reference. It's like when they mention in the Bible, such as the Jews killed Jesus. Obviously, this is not mentioned in the Quran. Let's get that clear. It's just a biblical reference. They might consider this as anti-Semitic as well.
That's a historical religious fact. So you can't even say that then?
No.
Without being anti-Semitic. Yeah, so they are going a bit too far, it seems. That's why some critics are worried.
They are silencing people
on
from
some
being,
next level.
From being critical of Israel.
And it's not Jews, is it? It's Israel.
No, it's Israel.
No other country, no other person, no other facility, no one, no team, no organisation, no one gets this pass apart from Zionists.
No one has this level of protection. Yes, Zionists. We have to be clear.
It's not
Jews. It is Zionists who are doing this. Oh, and there is another definition apparently the IHRA is using. If you say Israel is bad, or if you say it's the Zionists, you're actually trying to hide the fact that you mean all Jews.
But I mean, there's not even that agenda. We're just referring to one specific, let's just say, group.
Sect group.
We're not referring to us all Jews.
I mean, Muslims could use that. So
let's just make it about ISIS or
Taliban, you refer to all Muslims. No, we refer to that extreme faction within your community.
That's what the Western media tried to portray, that all Muslims are bad, including the
But they can openly say, well, we're not talking about all Muslims, we're not talking about ISIS, or we're talking about Taliban. We ain't talking about all y'all. But when you're saying it to them, it's like, oh, if you're talking about one, you must be talking the whole. And we've got to keep emphasizing it's not about. Yeah.
I denounce anti-Semitism in all its forms. And I stand with my friends in the Jewish community. And that, Kanye, is how you buy yourself some time. I got to tell you guys, I've probably been doing this 35 years now. And early in my career, I learned that there are two words in the English language that you should never say together in sequence. And those words are the and Jews. I've never heard someone do good after they said that. Kanye's gotten into some scrapes before. Normally when he's in trouble, I pull up immediately. But this time I was like, you know what? Let me see what's going to happen first. Let's see. I can't even remember how it started. Vaguely, I remember it started with a tweet, strange tweet. It was like, I'm feeling a little sleepy. I'm going to give me some rest, but when I wake up, I'm going to go DEFCON 3 on the Jews. And then he just went to bed. I was up all night worried. What is he going to do to the Jews? And he was on one. He was mad about something. He said, I can say anti-Semitic things, and Adidas can't drop me. Now what? Adidas dropped that immediately. Ironically, Adidas was founded by Nazis. And they were offended. I guess the student surpassed the teacher. Well, I've been to Hollywood. Don't want y'all to get mad at me. I'm just telling you, I've been to Hollywood. This was just what I saw. It's a lot of Jews. Like a lot.
And let's be clear here. There are Jewish people who go on the weekly protests calling for a ceasefire and calling for independence for the Palestinian people. There are Jewish people in Israel who are fighting for equal rights for the Palestinians to remove the apartheid system that is there currently. As well, in Israel, there are Arabs. They do not have the same rights as Jews do. So when they try to say that Israel is a democratic country, it's not. And when I say Arab, I don't mean Muslim. Arabs could be Arab Christian, Arab Muslim, Arab any other faith. Arab atheists, they don't have the same right as a Jew. A Jew in Israel has more rights than any other citizen. Check this up yourself. You can actually check it.
Thanks for that. Right, getting back to the timeline. Now we're moving into May of 2024. Tensions still remained high, and at least 107 journalists were killed since the war onset in October 2023. The Committee of Protect Journalists highlighted the high risk faced by media workers in Gaza due to continuous airstrikes and ground assaults. The Gaza's health ministry reported escalating casualties with daily death tolls often exceeding 100 people per day. By mid-May, the death toll in Gaza had surpassed 35,000 people, including a significant number of women and children.
The attack on Rafah happened at night on May 26, 2024. The area target was in Tal al-Sultan, northwest of Rafah in the Gaza Strip. This area is known as the safe zone. Gazan's authorities and the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, that's PRCS, has identified the area as a safe place for displaced people to seek refuge. Tragically, when displaced individuals sought safety there, they came under attack. At least 35 people were killed in this strike. Most of the victims were women and children. No hospital in Rafah had the capability to handle the number of casualties. Hamas described the attack as a massacre and held the US administration and President Joe Biden
/ Genocide Joe
/ Sleepy Joe Biden
personally accountable.
Genocide Joe, you terrorize souls. When your eyes closed at night, how do you sleep? At night, how do you show. You better lie low. We're getting quite close. At night we feel you breathe.
Hamas asserted that Israel would not have carried out the strike without American support and the green light for it to invade Rafah, despite its overcrowding with displaced citizens.
The Israeli Defense Force, or Israeli Occupation Force, stated that they struck a Hamas compound in Rafah. They used precise munitions based on intelligence indicating Hamas's use of the area. The IDF claimed to have killed Yassin Rabia, the commander of Hamas, and Khalid Nagar, a senior official in the Hamas wing, in the same region. Due to pressure over the number of civilian deaths, those strikes are now under review.
Is that what they said? Israel, they're reviewing.
That's what Israel said.
What does that even mean? We'll have a look. Oh, sorry, we killed a bunch of innocent people. Oh, by the way, we just wiped out entire families.
Who's there to verify these reports? Israel is just going to whitewash themselves.
Hold them to account.
Similar to what they did when they went back to the Al-Shifa hospital a second time around and they completely destroyed it. The British Israeli representative said that no civilians were killed and we only caught Hamas military personnel. They said they took away 400 people and not a single civilian was killed. Now they found a mass grave at Al-Shifa.
It's like they're targeting vulnerable places like Al-Shifa Hospital, like this place in Rafah.
Rafah had become a vast refuge camp due to the ongoing conflict. Approximately 1.5 million Palestinians sought shelter in Rafah, having fled from other cities, refuge camps and villages in the region. This tragic event highlights the devastating impact of armed conflict on civilian lives, and Israel referring that all Palestinians are combatant, not normal civilians.
Yeah, I agree with you, Saul. They're just lumping everyone together. So even unarmed, innocent civilians are being classed as combatants and targets.
I just want to ask you then about something else he said in his speech, which is about the collective punishment, as he put it, of the Palestinian people. And I want to talk about that in the context of the blockade and keeping fuel out of Gaza. I just wonder if you think that that is really necessary.
You know, I'm very puzzled by the constant concern which the world and also Britain, I must say, Mark, is showing for the Palestinian people and is actually showing for these horrible, inhuman animals who have done the worst atrocities that this century has seen and the worst atrocities that Jews have suffered since the Holocaust.
So desperate people seeking flour, anything, any sustenance, considering the fact that they've been left to starve to death. And as they're, you know, swarming the humanitarian aid convoy, the trucks, they get fired at by the IDF.
So
who are the animals?
Yeah.
Who are the animals, Cenk? Who are the animals?
Because
I'm getting real sick of people on social media referring to Palestinian civilians as animals. Because every story that we've covered, everything that we've investigated and looked into, does not really show Palestinians behaving as animals. It shows the IDF behaving as animals. People who feel real good about themselves shooting their weapons at desperate people as they swarm a humanitarian aid truck. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so back to the timeline, we're now moving into June of 2024. Israeli forces intensified ground operations in Gaza. The International Community Court announced it was seeking arrest warrants for leaders on both sides for potential war crimes and crimes against humanity. In early June 2024, the humanitarian situation in Gaza worsened. Reports of famine conditions in the north, the US aid and other international organizations called for immediate intervention to prevent further civilian suffering. Throughout this period, international efforts to mediate peace and provide humanitarian aid faced significant challenges due to the ongoing hostilities and political complexities. The conflict has resulted in a widespread destruction and a high civilian death toll and severe humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
What we're really seeing is hypocrisy here. Israel has travelled the world trying to garner political support, but also civilian support. Initially, people came out and said Israel has a right to defend itself. But then you saw these genocidal TikTok messages, quotes from Israeli politicians. Gaza should be razed to the ground. Civilians there are animals. They said that all the civilians are targets because they voted for Hamas.
Which, well, seems like what they're doing, isn't it? They're acting on what they've said.
But then why say Hamas is a terrorist organization? Because couldn't you say, well, Israeli citizens are fair gain as well because they voted for Netanyahu? It's a tit for tat. You're right. It doesn't work both ways. But you can always use the same argument.
One rule for one and another for another.
Double standards always. Always been the double standards, even in the media.
The one who's the strongest always wins out. But luckily, we've got media outlets, platforms available to us to put the truth out there. And people are now seeing that this is not about self-defense. This is about wiping the Palestinian people out or pushing them out. And that is genocide. They said that, why don't they move to, was it Uganda? We'll even pay your tickets for you.
Yeah, you can't displace an entire nation.
Exactly, you can't.
And you can't expect the other country to deal with that. Like, it's not, just not how it works.
And host them, look after them.
Exactly, yeah, it'll just put a burden on them.
Why should they move? It's their land.
They don't want to. Yeah. Why would you, innit?
That's the thing. Wherever you're raised, that's your place of birth.
Just wonder what's their end goal with this.
Well, they had that end goal, didn't they? Jared Kushner came out with that plan.
What plan?
Turning Gaza into a resort.
And Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable.
Well, that's not it. I'd say it's also another plan. Remember when I mentioned earlier about the red calf?
Oh, yeah. The story of the red heifer.
Yeah.
Or red calf. So from my research, I found in Jewish scripture, specifically in the Torah, within the book of Numbers, there were a few key points about the red heifer. The red heifer is used for ritual and purification. According to Jewish law, contact with a dead body makes a person ritually impure. The ashes of a red heifer, when mixed with water, are used to purify those who become impure through such contact. The heifer must be red, a cow without blemish or any defect, and must never have been yoked. The red heifer ritual symbolizes the importance, purity of holiness in the community. In Jewish eschatology, the appearance of a red heifer is often linked to the coming of the Messiah and the rebuilding of the Third Temple. According to some interpretations, the red heifer ritual will be revived in the Messianic era and purify the people of the Temple. Finding a red heifer that meets the scriptural criteria is extremely rare. In the book of Ezekiel, God promises to cleanse the people from their uncleanliness, to give them a new heart and spirit, reflecting the theme of redemption.
That's interesting. I didn't actually know about any of that.
It's actually on the internet. You're not familiar with that, no?
No, I've not been looking at too much of the religious side, apart from one story that I read about Benjamin Netanyahu, but that's something completely different.
No, they've actually got the cow, so they're basically found, they're rare to find, like they said, and they found four of them in Texas. They bought four. You only need one, but just in case one dies or something happens, they bought four. Guess how much for?
This is going to be some ridiculous amount.
This is going to be money. Do you want to take a guess?
Okay,
let's take a guess for a cow, you know what I mean? What would you expect?
So one heifer, I think, if it's so important to them religiously, I think they would.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Would have paid over $1 million.
Whoa, you're right. Ridiculous there. What plan? I told you this guy's a secret millionaire. I don't know. No, that's way overestimation. What would you think, Saul?
For one?
Yeah, for one. It's a cow. It's a red heifer. Okay, it's rare. It's a bit unique. I get it. It's rare.
Dollars or pounds? So dollars. Okay, dollars. Dollars are about 3,000 to 4,000.
You guys are pretty rich, I'd say. So they paid 100k per heifer, per calf, and which works out
400k.
Yeah, and obviously that's just for the heifer itself, not to say the money that it's going to cost to transport him and then look after him. That's additional. Also, which I've not mentioned already, but the rabbi that's going to sacrifice him has to be a virgin. Has to be pure, not touch the dead person, all these other things as well. And they've actually got monasteries, they've got places where they've got people ready to do the sacrifice. So it just can't be any average Joe that can do it. It's got to be a certain criteria for the person that's doing the sacrifice as well as the heifer itself.
So in other words, for example, you know when someone dies, we do a ghusl for them.
Yeah, ghusl.
Like, well, ghusl means what? Wash.
Wash the dead person's body. You're not supposed to do that either.
That would make you impure, according to them, yeah. So that person could never, you know, would be impure by that standard, yeah.
From the Jewish plans of sacrificing the red heifer. In September 2022, the perfect red heifers were imported from Texas to Israel. As of now, the red heifers are blemish-free and are being prepared for a sacrifice that will change the status of the Temple Mount. A special altar is already built and the Temple Institute plans to perform the sacrifice of the red heifer before this upcoming Passover. And why is this important? Because it can trigger the events that will lead up to the building of the third temple in Jerusalem. The Temple Institute is actively preparing for this very moment. They are training the future priests that will serve in the future temple. The priests are already performing sacrifices every year and training for the very important sacrifice that may happen this Passover.
Whoa, I didn't know that. I'm surprised.
Well, it is, but what else is surprising? You know how like everyone wants to go on about October the 7th? And that's where it all started. And I know, Saul, we've done an episode on this before. And if you haven't heard that, it's called
Present Palestine, an Unwanted Gift.
So please make sure you listen to that segment because it's all in order. So we go into depth on that, but I'll just touch on here. Because this is an ongoing conflict, which, again, we've covered in other segments of this conflict series. So if you haven't heard it, please listen to it in order. But just for those that haven't, just 2 weeks before October the 7th, Israel bombed Gaza for 3 days straight. On September the 22nd, 2023, the Israeli military conducted airstrikes on the blockaded Gaza Strip. These attacks occurred amid ongoing protests between protesters and Israeli troops along the separation fence. On September the 26th, 2023, the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, airstrikes at least 30 Palestinians, including women and children, were killed and over 200 were injured. Where was the global outrage for this terrorist attack? All we heard was October the 7th, October 7th. Where was this?
And this is why Hamas did what they did. They were looking for the world to see their struggle. It was barely reported on any of the media outlets. But when 7th of October happened, it was everywhere. It was on every single news outlet.
Exactly, that's my point. So if they want to say it started on October 7th, we could say no, it started on September the 26th with the 3-day military strikes. We could say that. But okay, let's say that happened and October 7th was the response of Hamas, right? Then let's see how fair the response of Israel was on the 8th of October. In just the first 6 days, Israel forces dropped more bombs on Gaza than America did in Iraq war in a whole year. And this is a document, you can check this out. And Palestine doesn't even have an army to defend themselves. So does that justify that response? Would you not class that as a terror attack?
Now, people keep on talking about being proportionate. This is way beyond proportionate now. IDF force and the people in charge, the right wing, they are absolutely rabid. They're seeing blood and they're lavishing in it.
Yeah, so it's not just a fire response. It's like we discussed in one of the previous episodes. The Gaza Strip is, was it the size of London or what?
One quarter of London.
One quarter of London, and they've dropped more bombs in the first 6 days than America dropped in Iraq in a whole year. Let that sink in.
How can you do that to people?
When you mentioned that, Dims, about the bombs, I remember a story that bombs that were destined for Ukraine got diverted to Israel instead. And one of those shipments were bombs that America had bought from Pakistan, and they were going to send them to the Ukraine, but instead they sent them from Cyprus to Israel to be used on Gaza.
But there's another reason for this absurd amount of bombardment, as well as the genocidal factor, and that they don't even see these Palestinians as humans. They see them less than animals. But also to make the environment inhabitable, because there is so much asbestos, heavy metals, white phosphorus and nitrate pollution that even for the survivors, it will be difficult to go back home and rebuild. Do you know, Palestinians are not even allowed agricultural land outside of a dedicated area called Area C, which is located in the West Bank. Palestinians are not even allowed to expand or dig for more water wells. Water is a basic human need to survive. So what did they do? People of desperation, they tried to find a workaround. They put rain assisters to collect rainwater, but then the occupation comes and removes this. So they're not even allowed to collect rainwater. Boy, the Americans said that Saddam Hussein was an evil dictator. Where is this international police at now? Oh yeah, that's right, they're in bed with Israel. The hypocrisy is shocking. It's in plain sight for everyone to see. For example, take a look at Greta Thunberg. She was a climate change activist, and she kind of became a poster child for this climate change campaign. But as soon as she spoke up and said, and I quote, "To stand with Palestine is to be human."
We cannot remain silent. No one can remain silent when there's an ongoing genocide and when people are denied the most basic human needs. We must always stand up and speak up against oppression, against imperialism, against war, and against discrimination and racism in all forms. To stand with Palestine is to be human.
Where is she now? No one hears from her. I bet she's probably shadow banned, because that's what usually happens.
More than likely.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, I can give you a perfect example of that. Listen to this.
Are you Jewish?
Am I Jewish? No, actually, I'm Catholic.
Wrong answer. Try again.
What?
Look, you want to work in this town or don't you? That's interesting, Mac, because I am Jewish.
No, you're not.
I am. I was born Theodore Shapiro, and I would like to donate money to Israel and continue to work in Hollywood forever. Thank you. I am Jewish.
You're an idiot.
Yeah, well, we'll see who the idiot is when they give me my private plane at the next secret synagogue meeting.
That's funny. But you know what? It's sad that there's that much level of control that they're silencing people.
Yeah, you speak up, you speak the truth, you get shadow banned. We're probably going to get shadow banned for saying what we've said.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're a new up-and-coming podcast, but we don't care. We have to speak the truth. As they say, the truth shall set you free. You know, we just couldn't stay silent on this issue. Hence, we did a whole entire series on this. And we would greatly appreciate your support. So please subscribe. It costs you nothing. Share this with as many of your friends and family as you can. It will help us grow. And more importantly, it will help get the message out. So please, for the love of humanity, share this message with all your friends and family. Like we said, we're trying to give a
voice to the voiceless. Voice to the voiceless. Voice to the voiceless.
And we need your help.
We've given you the stepping stones to go and look into this yourself. The information we've provided is freely available, and it's not dodgy websites. My research from the UN, Al Jazeera, Wikipedia. I even used the American Jewish Committee.
Yeah, so please help us, because the power is in the people. not in money. Because countries like UK and USA funding this genocidal war, it's a bit ludicrous when they have so many internal problems. I mean, look at UK. It's going downhill. We can do a whole different episode on that. And the US, they're not much better. They've got many internal problems that are hitting a new critical crisis. For example, the homelessness crisis, the drug epidemic, whether that's prescription drugs or opioids or illegal drugs like fentanyl.
Yet citizens are dying daily and governments turn around and say, oh, well, we've got no money. Yet since the start of Israel's war with Hamas on the 7th of October,
allegedly,
the United States since the 7th of October has enacted legislation providing at least $12 billion in military aid to Israel, which includes $3.8 billion from a bill in March 2024. Does this seem like the country is broke? Why are we funding wars? Like Dims said, why aren't we helping the homeless? $12 billion, that's enough money to make sure there is no homeless person in your country.
Yeah, that's just absurd, Niz. But guess what? This might sound absurd, but it's not. Whoever's the next American president, they can end this conflict with a phone call. And I know this might seem unrealistic, but it's actually not. If you think about it, it's not even a war. It's basically one powerful army dropping bombs and killing innocent civilians. So instead of giving billions to Israel, save those billions. And like Niz said, give it to your own citizens who are in desperate need of these funds. I said, whoever's the president at the time you're hearing this, hopefully it's ending by then, is pick up the phone and tell Israel, stop bombing and the killing will cease immediately. And they will say, yep, roger that, done, because they know how much America funds them. I know it sounds far-fetched, but Reagan did this back in 1982 when he called Israel, and within 20 minutes of that phone call, the bombing stopped and Israelis increased aid, food supplies, and even opened up a water line and increased humanitarian aid. And that situation was nowhere near as dire as what's going on in Gaza right now.
Yeah, I think I remember that a war that they were having with Lebanon, and when they were getting too far into Lebanon, Reagan told them to stop, and they did.
Yeah, but all these politicians of today seem weak. They all seem like they want to bend the knee to Netanyahu. It's crazy. They all just flip-flop. It's like clown world out here. And it just goes from bad to worse.
We come from Israel! Our people come from Israel! You have come from your people!
Zionism is a political movement which is causing bloodshed.
What are you talking about? That's where our family is from. I'm from Israel. How can you hold that flag?
This is because the actions of the Zionist people, they are responsible.
What are you talking about? That's where our ancestors!
We lived in a beautiful
place. What flag is that? Don't you say that, you're a Jew!
A beautiful peace of Palestinian people for hundreds of years.
How can you say that? You're not a Jew! You're not a Jew! How dare you!
When Zionists came in, they caused their bloodshed. They caused rivers of bloodshed.
How can you say that? You're Jewish! How can you shame your own people?
Who is a Jew?
We are Jews!
So it's like, oh, we're not going to do anything about it, but now we're not going to let you even speak about it. Because we're going to implement new laws to say that you can't even speak about this issue. But wait, what's America's First Amendment? The right to freedom of speech. So now look into the future. This is not just a Middle East issue. It's encroaching on the rights of every American citizen. Like the Founding Fathers, they'd be turning in their graves right now. And the same goes for the UK. I remember, growing up, we used to have this saying in the UK, it's a free country. I'm not sure if the kids still use that now. But it's that slowly dying out because it's like your voice is being muted. You're not even allowed to speak up on issues that directly affect you. So like when we're talking about funding, why are they telling us they're broke and they're sending so much money overseas to a war that we've got nothing to do with?
The days have passed. They're gone. You had politicians that had a backbone. Now they're all about money. You've got Zionist lobbyists who are now funding politicians. So what are those politicians going to do? To keep that funding, to get the Israel Friends of Labour Party to fund their parties, they're going to do whatever the Israelis ask for. Suella Braverman didn't come up with the idea of banning the Palestinian flag. It was these lobby groups that did it. and we need to ban these lobby groups. For example, I'm sure the UK has an equivalent, but in America, any candidate who wants to become a president, they have to go to the AIPAC conference. The only religious organisation, otherwise no other.
That's conflict of interest.
It is an absolute conflict of interest. The only candidate who hasn't gone to AIPAC and he has spoken out about it is Bernie Sanders. He said, how can I allow an organisation to control the policies that I make?
But the government doesn't do anything. So it's like you tell them, hey, there's a homeless crisis here. Look, we're struggling. The education system's failing. The healthcare system's broken. We need help. Help me if you can. And the government just turns around and says, oh yeah, sorry, we're broke. We're broke as well. And then...
Starmer's been saying that as well.
Yeah, and then you see him giving billions to Israel. And you're like, hold on, that's money for us. We're the citizens of this country and we're in dire need of it ourselves. And when you say that, then it's like, all right, now you're being anti-Semitic. You just broke the law. It's well and truly clown world. I can't believe what's going on. It's like, it makes a question... Where does your government's loyalty truly lie?
I watched a documentary. It's called Boycott. And it's available on Al Jazeera. But the original producers, justvision.org. And basically what it's about is how the Zionist lobby groups were able to get senators in the United States to pass a law to stop any employee of the state or organisation that receives funding from the state to not take part in any BDS movement or be critical of Israel. Imagine how perverted that is. You can boycott your own country. So American citizens can boycott the United States. They can be critical of the United States, but you can't say anything about Israel and you can't boycott them.
That's what's happened now. The citizens are starting to question the leaders. Who is their loyalty with? Is it with their citizens or is it with the Israeli establishment? Actions speak louder than words.
So, what action can we take from here onwards?
Well, I think they need to stop the bombing immediately. That's the very first step. And then, well, I don't think there's an immediate resolution. Experts broadly agree that there's no clear end in sight for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So I don't think there's a quick solution. What do you guys think?
Two sides are too far apart. Israel is not willing to allow the Palestinians to have a state. And we've heard this from Israeli politicians, just like the British ambassador, Zippy Hotovelli. And then you have Palestinians who just want their land back. They still carry keys around their neck of the houses where they used to live. And every year, they go back to the land that was taken from them and remember it. And they pass this message on to their children so that they never, ever forget. Of course, they can't go into Israel, but when they're in the West Bank or in Gaza, because they've been displaced within those enclaves as well, they return to their homes, ancestral homes, and just remember and pass on a message to their children to keep this memory alive. Don't forget.
This conflict's likely to continue and take different forms. So this former diplomats and policy experts like Chatham House emphasise, without addressing the root cause issue, such as the humanitarian crisis, this conflict's going to persist. And it's like, I think, Saul, we were discussing the other day, like, what they've done now, they've just took probably 20 steps backwards. You remember about that convo?
Yeah, so when you push someone to the tether, they obviously got no options.
Exactly.
So it's like, fight for all you got or die. That's all they have.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's like you've just shown a young child how they will be treated when they get older. All you've done is shown them hatred. And when they grow up, they're not going to turn around and say, Hamas was bad. They're going to turn around and say, I want to join Hamas because I want revenge.
It baffles me to think that these are the top strategic analysts in the world in Israel and the US, and they do not even consider the concept that Hamas is an ideology first and an organization second. So there's no way of defeating and ultimately rooting out all of Hamas if that is their pure aim. And there's one extremely important point to note that I heard an UNRWA colleague make yesterday on an interview, you know, and whether we agree with this or not, this is the truth. We've seen this in the Northern Ireland conflict. We've seen it in Afghanistan. We've seen it in Iraq, that with every Hamas fighter killed and every civilian killed, what the Israeli government, funded by the US, is really doing is creating a new Hamas. How can these people forgive the bombing of all their families, everything they know?
So Israel has turned around, and instead of stopping people being recruited into these organizations, all they've done is promoted it. They've created the next generation of, and I'm not going to call them terrorists, freedom fighters.
Yeah, Israel's political landscape might even see different shifts now due to internal and external pressures, but the security concerns will always be there due to Israelis' military actions and the mistreatment of the Palestinians. The humanitarian situation in Gaza and the West Bank is expected to worsen if this conflict continues unabated. Experts highlight the dire conditions in these areas. They are exacerbated by blockades and military actions by Israel. Conflict affects global economic conditions, particularly through disruptions in oil production, the global shipping routes. Experts have noted reduction in regional economic growth and tourism. I mean, I don't know, is a two-state solution still viable? Is that still an option?
I don't believe so, personally.
I don't think either, because Niz mentioned Zippy Hatovely. She's obviously denied a two-state solution, so has Netanyahu. So they don't want it. So if they don't want it, how can you move forward with someone that doesn't agree with a two-state solution?
The answer is absolutely no, and I'll tell you why.
Well, then because how can there the be moment, peace?
No,
how can there be peace
in Israel? The reason there is no peace
Israel.
Is because the Palestinians...
How can, without offering a state to Palestine, how can there be peace in Israel?
Israel knows today, and the world should know now, the reason the Oslo Accords failed is because the Palestinians never wanted to have a state next to Israel. They want to have a state from the river to the sea.
So the two-state solution is dead.
Why are you obsessed with a formula that never worked, that created this radical people in the other side? Why are you obsessed with that?
But then also, what will the Palestinians be left with? It's not going to go back to the 1967 borders. I don't believe Israel will ever let go of any of the settlements that they've created in the West Bank, which means the Palestinians... currently as they are, because you've got to remember, all the Palestinians are not in the West Bank or Gaza. There's a Palestinian diaspora spread throughout the world. So as of 2022, there was 14.3 million Palestinians in the world. Of those, only 5.3 million Palestinians live in the state of Palestine. That's the West Bank and Gaza. So once the state is created, where will the other 10 million reside? They will have to remain abroad. But then again, the land hasn't been developed either due to, like Dim said, all the bombing and all the military raids and attacks. The land isn't fertile. How are they going to be able to build their infrastructure? How are they going to do agriculture? And what about schools? The population age for Palestinians is very young.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely doom and gloom, and it's unfortunate, but it's a fact of life. We are where we're at. I'm thinking of like a possible solution, like how do we move forward? And I don't see it happening without international aid, like everyone joining in. You'd have to rebuild it from the ground up. You'd have to rebuild the infrastructure on the healthcare, the education system. And obviously, if you talk about a two-state solution, you'd have to have free elections in Palestine and legitimate ones that the people have put in as representations of them. You'd have to have stronger international oversight to ensure that the human rights are respected of the Palestinian people and they're protected. There's got to be legal punishment and repercussions if, you know, their rights are being violated.
I think that's right. There's a number of options out there. There needs to be a give and take. So one option is, which I'm in favour of, is Gaza and the West Bank are absorbed into Israel and all Palestinians given an equal rights. And the Palestinians are given the right of return as Jews are.
I mean, that's what the Middle East wants.
They want peace.
Yeah, peace. Yeah. Regional powers like Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, they all basically want peace for Israel and Palestine. But this does require active involvement from the EU and the US.
They can't continue to support Israel's invasion, incursions, genocide. After October the 7th and the attacks, Germany paid some money to Holocaust survivors. I mean, where are France and Britain? Why are they not paying compensation to the Palestinians for the Sykes-Picot Agreement, for the Balfour Declaration? Why is it that only Holocaust survivors are receiving money when the Palestinians have been pushed out due to Western
involvement?
Yeah, well, not involvement. I would like to use a harsher word. Their tricks.
I think they need to establish independent bodies that will investigate and hold those accountable, those responsible for war crimes and human rights violations. And both sides must recognise each other's right to coexist, but it just seems like it's one side doesn't want it. The UN and international NGOs should increase humanitarian aid to Gaza and the West Bank, focusing on immediate needs like food, water, medical supplies and shelter. This aid must be coordinated to ensure it reaches the most affected areas without interruption. Reconstruction programs to rebuild the infrastructure of schools, hospitals, homes that were destroyed in the supposed conflict. These programs should involve the local communities and foster ownership and sustainability. Deploy UN peacekeeping forces to observe and to monitor and make sure any ceasefires are adhered to.
You're absolutely right. The international organisations such as the UN, the ICJ and the ICC need to be able to hold countries to account. Even if those who haven't signed up to it need to be held to account. What are these organisations for if only the rich and powerful can run them while the weak and poor are the only ones being held to account?
I agree, Nis. It's only by adopting a comprehensive approach that combines diplomatic, humanitarian, security, economic, education strategies with the help of the international community, that's the only way for a sustainable resolution to this Israel-Palestinian conflict. These efforts require coordinated action for a long-term commitment and a focus on addressing immediate issues and needs for all the underlying causes.
So basically, we don't want this to happen again in another couple of years or 5 years or 10 years. This merry-go-round needs to stop.
My final thoughts on this, the Palestinians should be treated equally, because for so long it seems like they haven't, and that's all they require. And possibility, at least give them Palestine back.
Couldn't agree with you more there, Saul. And on that note, thank you for joining us on this journey. We hope you pray for the Palestinians, and as will we, and hope this ends soon. And we'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
I'll have to say thanks to Dims and thanks to Saul. It's been an eye-opener and really taught me some new things. And I hope it has for all the listeners as well. And hope to see you again. Bye-bye.
Have an open mind and look into this matter further. And on that note, goodbye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.